G'day, it's Daniel Harford. Welcome to the Best of the Breakfast Club on RSN 927. It was jam-packed. Check it out.
Adam White is here, ready to go. He's been here for ages, just preparing for a big show, and he's back again. Good morning to you, Whitey.
Good morning to you, Harf. How are you today?
Going great, thank you.
That's terrific.
How are you, more importantly?
I'm going fantastic.
You sure?
Yeah.
Right.
Going very well, thank you.
Right.
Just time I run to perfection, didn't I, really?
Well, unbelievable.
Like Kiwi coming down the outside in 1983.
Very, very impressive.
Get it to the line.
Very, very impressive.
Didn't look possible at the clock tower.
Where's the clock tower equivalent in the journey?
At the end of the freeway.
Right, okay. Got some lights.
You see, when you get a situation where you need petrol.
God, you didn't do this again,
and
did you?
Your
petrol
go to the petrol station
is a shambles.
You go to the petrol station. You're a fraction behind time anyway, but that's okay. And you get to the Bowser, and an announcement comes over the loudspeaker.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry, sir, but due to a station upgrade, we are not supplying any petrol until 6 a.m.
Oh, no.
Fantastic.
Which one? Off the freeway, Nicholson Street?
No, I hadn't got that far.
Oh, well, safety mechanism.
So the next three petrol stations also were not open until 6 a.m. So you're up against it. Anyway, I'm here.
Morning petrol is a disaster. It needs to be a nighttime fill.
Well, of course, I've come
to that conition.
But you get to that situation, you go, oh, I just get in the morning, can't be
bothered. Yeah, so now you've got to make the effort, you've got to get out there. You've got to fight hard late to get yourself in a position where you can just control the situation. Like Adam Ramanauskas, who controls every situation magnificently. Did it as a great player with the Bombers. These days manages careers absolutely into the stratosphere. He's the best in the business. Rama, good morning to you.
Very good morning. I would have thought you would just do that sort of stuff the night before.
Well, I've learnt this. I have done this similar thing to Adam. Hmm. I've done the old, I'll get it in the morning gag. Yeah. It never works.
Yeah. Oh, even after golf yesterday, just when you're coming home.
Yeah, before school. Yeah, before school pickup.
I wasn't in any sort of mood to do any of that sort of thing after golf yesterday.
There was an incident yesterday.
Well, there's always an incident on the golf. Good, bad, or ugly.
No, this was bad and ugly at times. Mm. It certainly wasn't good. That's what I do know.
I'd forgotten that.
There was an incident yesterday, Rama. It caused a great duress.
Well, there's two. There's two incidents, but yeah. The second one was addressed at home. The first one was something that I need to just get better at.
What was the first one?
When I lost a ball when I shouldn't have.
Which one was
And
that?
I was going very well at the time.
Wow.
In the eighth hole.
Oh, yes.
Couldn't find the ball. And I don't react well to that sort of thing.
Wasn't in the middle of the fairway, Rama. I can tell you that much.
Clearly.
Should have been found.
Otherwise, you would have been able to find it.
Yeah.
Should have been found.
Well, possibly. Possibly. Might have
should have been found. And
stuck in a tree.
Two-shot penalty because I can't find the ball. Ran out of time. And then it just didn't really...
And that sort of happens in a round of golf. We all lose balls. We all stray from the tee every now and then, Rama. So that's not unusual.
That's if you use your driver.
That's right. Well, mate, I had some issues with the forward yesterday. Don't worry about it.
No.
It wasn't a great day. Fair to say the hot streak has been cooled somewhat.
Daniel and I were on the internet mapping out our itinerary for the PGA Tour for next year during the week. We might just put the laptop away. For a while.
Yes, no, like we can afford a bit more time to research our schedule a little bit more.
And the second incident?
Well, that's right. The first one is, like, that's regulation for anyone who plays golf. You lose a ball, you know, you don't like it, particularly when you think you should find it. Not to be. The second one, I haven't seen the after effects of the like for, I don't think, ever on the golf course. There was a combustion, a self-combustion from our man. There was an incident on the 16th tee. There was a phone call. Now, you make a choice in the golf world. You either answer calls on course.
Or you don't.
Or you don't. You give yourself that window of time to just focus and enjoy the company of others.
Yeah.
Our man answered the call. Adam, I'll let you pick it up from there.
It's described somewhat as a unforced error. And cost me two valuable Stableford points. And that was addressed when I got home.
So your wife called you?
Correct.
Right.
Well, three times.
Okay.
I was worried that there was something wrong with the kids.
Yeah.
Maybe something wrong with something else.
Mm-hmm. Maybe.
There wasn't. The phone call was unnecessary, and it cost me two valuable points.
What was the phone call regarding?
That doesn't matter. It's renovation related. And, yeah. Anyway.
How was the tone of your voice as the phone call progressed?
As the text message says, no one cares about your golf. We're moving on.
Well, it's the ability to rebound and focus after a negative experience that caught my eye. That's what caught my eye, I must admit. Fair to say, there was a pact made that there will never ever be an answered call again on the phone call on the golf course. It was a most amusing 20 minutes or so, I must admit. Most amusing. Rama, on the back page of the paper today, mm-hmm. is a picture of one of your men.
Yes.
Magic Door.
Yes.
Mark Robinson's done a little feature here. Well, it's a good size feature on Magic. He's playing tonight. Now, the Bulldogs take on North Melbourne at Marble Stadium tonight in the Marsh Community Series. Is that what we're calling it? The Marsh Community Series?
Yep.
The fact that he's playing football again, considering what happened to him in December 2018, is nothing short of extraordinary. How big a moment is this for him tonight when he gets back out there? Now, he's played VFL footy, but this is the top echelon, and I think this is one of the most remarkable football stories in my time.
No doubt. And look, it's a small step back to the bigger goal that Madge has been chasing to play senior football again in a competitive game. Now, whether that's round one, round five, round whatever that may be this year, that's completely up to Madge. But his form has been good enough through a couple of practice matches, intra-club practice matches with North Melbourne to be selected. So that's one part of the story. That's amazing. But to recover from the injuries that he sustained and how severe they were, and to watch him just go about it day in, day out has been quite remarkable. But then also to be on the road to recovery for the mental injuries that he's also sustained through that period of time has been remarkable. And he's done that with the support of many, many people, but he should be so proud of himself that he's got to this point now. He's almost in touching distance of that goal. So really now it's the next couple of weeks. It's up to him if he can reach that goal. He's got a newborn baby.
Hendrix, cool name.
Yeah, just recently before Christmas. So he's loving that as a father. He's fit, he's healthy, he's happy. I'm really proud of him myself. It's just from where he was to where he is today is just miles and miles and miles apart, and I'm just happy. I'm happy that he's happy and healthy.
So how's he got there? You talk about being miles and miles and miles apart from where he was to where he is now. How is that? How have we got to this point? How have we gradually worked to get to this point? Because I reckon you're starting from a long, long, long way back. If clearly in the situation we found himself in that night in December, mm-hmm. you're a long, long way back and to where you are now. How does that happen? How do you do that? Because you're obviously intimately involved with this.
What he's done and what we spoke about at the start is building each piece one by one, not sort of jumping ahead and thinking you can do this, that, or the other. It's he had to rebuild himself completely physically.
Mm.
The injuries,
broken hip, broken pelvis.
Yep. So they were major. They were worse than car crash injuries. So he rebuilt himself there, and then he's rebuilt himself mentally as well. So and it's really this will sound simple, but it's piece by piece.
Mm.
And that's the only way that he could have attacked this. If it was a matter of I'll just walk away from the club for 6 months and try to come back. He was back at the club in January last year. Nobody knew when he came back, but he came back really early in January last year because he wanted to and he was ready to and he needed to. He needed to get that normality back into his life of football and life. And then he built from there just slowly but surely. So I give full credit to Madge first and foremost because he has wanted to do it. I thought there would be times where his commitment to the cause would waver, but it hasn't.
Yeah,
he's had his challenges through it, no doubt. But I don't think it's ever really stopped him in his tracks again.
Yeah.
But I also give enormous credit to North Melbourne's doctors and medical staff, the way they've been able to manage him from the starting point of when the injuries were sustained to where he is now. I give enormous credit to his psychologist and how they've gone about it, and that's been done off-site, and Madge is really committed to that. And then I also give credit to his family and friends, that they've been there for him constantly, day in, day out, and checking in on him on how he's been tracking.
Will he come back a better player? And I know that's irrelevant in a sense, but the reason I ask that as a question is he now understands what's important to him in the world. And that's not just in going out there and playing on a weekend, but the whole preparation, being around teammates, all that sort of thing.
I hope so. But that's the unknowns. Everything suggesting where he was before all this happened, he was rated in Champion Data Statistics as elite.
We do love the Champion Data Statistics by the numbers here.
Is that still
going? It was just standby.
In negotiation.
Right. Good.
Standby.
I was hoping it was sort of gone, but anyway. But so he was rated as an elite defender. So can he get back to those levels? He's competing. Reece Shaw's been really open and honest that he's competing with Josh Walker and Sam Durden for that second key defender post. Robbie Tarrant's got obviously one sewn up. His intra-club practice match form over the recent couple of weeks has been really, really positive in terms of his testing with regards to his power and athleticism. The numbers are still through the roof, which is just remarkable. And I was only speaking with North Melbourne the other day about it, and they can't believe it themselves, just how he's been able to recover and produce the power still that he did in the past.
Oh, I think it's one of the most amazing stories. I really do. And it's probably one of those ones that's drifted along without too much focus, probably for a good thing for Madge through all this. And
I hope it continues that way.
Managed well by the club and by your company. But yeah, and that's right. And I think there's an enormous element of respect from the outside towards the story and the situation. It is a story that as yet is untold.
And I don't think that will be told anytime soon.
And I don't think anyone is desperate for it.
No.
I think we get a chance tonight to celebrate the resilience and the achievement that he's just getting back to playing football at this level. I'm absolutely in awe of the situation, of the fact that he's got back to this point. Because you talk about those moments and building things moment by moment, and that's been the mechanism for it. But the ability to do that without too many hiccups and the too hard basket coming in, which I'm sure filtered through his mind at times.
Well, he hurt his hamstring late in the VFL season. So he played a couple of games and hurt his hamstring pretty severely and was unable to play for the remainder of the season. And there was a concern how he would handle that whole situation. He was brilliant. He was brilliant through it. He understood, okay, yep, I've got to rehab my hamstring piece by piece and go from there. And then since he came back to pre-season, it was a bit of a slow start because of that rehabilitation from the hamstring injury. But again, he's been able to do the amount of work required to be an AFL footballer again.
It's a remarkable return from Magic Doyle. You'll see him in action tonight for the North Melbourne Football Club against the Dogs at Marvel Stadium as part of the AFL's pre-season Masters Community Series.
Oh, I think, obviously, echoing Steve's words yesterday about walking into first the airport and then walking into here, obviously the memories weren't great. But, since... Like the last few days, every single person that we've come across that's asked for a photo or that we've, come in contact with and spoken to have nothing but great words to say and, welcoming us to the country and, have been really, really polite and, it's been incredible how much support we've had from people in the public. And I just played golf just then and they went over and above to make us feel more than welcome and, it was actually a great feeling.
That is the voice of David Warner. Great to have your company wherever you are listening. rsn.net.au, the traditional wireless, the app. Welcome anytime, anywhere. We will get you to the sporting places you want to go. He's in South Africa at the moment, getting ready for the first T20 at Joburg against South Africa, of course. The first time they've been back to the scene of the crime, so to speak, since that infamous test match not long ago. But they tell us that security is going to be beefed up. David Warner suggesting there that fans have been fantastic, but the measures are put in place. Why do they make sure that there is nothing untoward coming the way of the Australians for this T20 international? Is that fair, do you think, or is that over the top?
No, particularly in South Africa, I think it's probably the right thing to do. I think it's one of those things that at some point these two are going to have to face the South Africans, and what I mean by that is the crowd, probably more so the media, more so than the players, because they have sort of, you know, they've crossed paths, a few of them, since. But, you know, they've got to get it out of the system, a little bit like with the Ashes. They've just got to deal with it and move on. They put themselves in this position. They've got to deal with it and move on. And I think it's more David Warner probably than Steve Smith, because, of course, Dave Warner was also involved in that altercation with the Quinny de Kock in the...
Quinny was too, in the stairwell.
In the stairwell. So, you know, there was a few things that Dave Warner was going through at that time, and we still, we still don't really know what happened, other than the fact that Warner and Smith were involved and got punished for it.
What's the alternative? That they don't play?
Well, exactly. And they look, they are important games in a lot of ways. I mean, some will say, oh, the complete waste of time. What are we doing travelling over there for a couple of weeks to play some short-form cricket? But with the T20 World Cup not that far away and not a lot of opportunities to play, you know, they've still got to work out their team. They've got to work out, you know, what their strategies are. You know, there's not too many opportunities against world-class opposition to do that before October.
3 a.m. tomorrow morning is the time.
It's not an ideal time, is it, really?
Well, no, it's not.
Your chance, Whitey?
It'd be all over by 6.
No, I won't be watching that one.
No, I wouldn't have thought so. Although Mitch Marsh is a chance to make his return to international cricket after punching walls and...
Yeah, and I think that I maintain that's the right call. I think he deserves that spot. And hopefully he takes that spot. And, you know, he actually, I think Reckon conceded for the first time recently that he's a better white ball player than he is a red ball player. And often he was in the test team and not in the one-day team or the T20 team. So, yeah, I think it's a real opportunity for him to take that spot. You know, obviously we know how well Stoinis went during the Big Bash, but in a different role. You know, Marsh is going to bat in that sort of 6-7 slot and provide some overs, and he's got that ahead of Stoinis, so he's got to take that opportunity.
We'll see what happens. Game one of the T20 series. Of course, the T20 World Cup is tonight. Kicks off tonight for the women. Australia v India at Giant Stadium. 7 p.m. Check your local guides. And we did know yesterday that Taylor Vlamic is going to be out for the Australian team for the pretty much the entire World Cup, which is a devastation for that young woman who's certainly making a name for herself and quite a reputation building for her in the world of international cricket. It does mean that Victorian spinner Molly Strano comes into the squad. But as a result of that, Annabelle Sutherland looks like she might be rocketed into the starting 11.
Yep. So she got a taste of it in the recent series. And talking about good stories, that's another terrific story considering obviously who her dad is, the former CEO of Cricket Australia, but she's so young. Mm. And to see both her and Will doing so well, these aren't sort of token games. They are serious players, and it's terrific, particularly for Annabelle ahead of a World Cup. So I'm not going to ask you, Huff, because I know what you'll be watching tonight. What will you watch tonight, Rama? If you had the choice out of the Women's World Cup, this is a good Facebook poll, Joey. And Twitter poll. If you had the choice, what would you be watching tonight? Will you watch the North Melbourne Bulldogs game? Will you be watching the AFLW? I assume there's a game of that on tonight.
St Kilda Melbourne at Moorabbin, RACA Park, back-to-back at Moorabbin.
Or will you watch the Women's T20 World Cup match? If you could only watch one of those three.
For work purposes, I'll have to watch the North Melbourne game.
All right, so clearly you're not the right person to ask either.
So what
I'm a notorious flicker.
That's not the exercise. If you could only watch one, what would you watch?
If you could only watch one match
think I would end up on the cricket.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I'd end up on the cricket.
Half will be watching the AFLW.
Well, I'll be watching St Kilda and Melbourne go.
But that's from work purposes.
But I'd watch that. I'd like a bit of footy. I'll flick over to the Kangas and the Doggies. in the men, and I flicked to the cricket. Yeah, I'll be doing some serious work with the thumb this evening.
Yeah, I know that, and I will too, but I'm saying if you only choose one,
I think
what
the cricket I would end on.
What would you end on?
I think the cricket, because it means a lot. And it's particularly the first match and all that sort of thing. I must confess, and the reason I ask that question is I sat down as a family to watch Hawthorn play last night, because obviously we're a Hawthorn family. Well, I'm talking general terms,
right.
Hawthorn family.
What?
And anyway.
Definition here.
Yeah.
Anyway. And I must confess, I thought, after such a boring international cricket season, I was like, I think I'm looking forward to the footy. And then it started, and it's like, oh, okay. You know, because it was just, there was no intensity. It was just a real practice match.
44-36 in the first quarter.
Yeah,
I thought the intensity was pretty good.
It was okay, but it was practice football.
St Kilda are definitely playing different to what they did last year.
No doubt about that. I'm not denying that. I'm just saying that it didn't have the intensity because it didn't mean much like a World Cup match tonight. So I'll just ask the question. What will people watch? Because it is that time of year where there's so many different things.
Bit of racing in the valley tonight, also.
Yeah, that's true.
Got Typhoon Tracy Stakes. We'll get the winner of that later on. I'm sure we'll find the winner of that a little bit later on. What you're saying, Whitey, is there's a smorgasbord for the sports fan to digest.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I'm also saying is through this period where the AFLW sort of has its time and.
Well, the NBL finals should also be on tonight.
Well, you're just about to say that. It's a real. I'm going to talk to Jeremy LaLiga about this.
Why
they would not have any sport at all this weekend in the basketball.
The commish, you were going to call him the commish.
Yeah, so I'm a bit surprised by that.
I think there is
a lot going on at the moment. What would be the preference if you had to choose one? Because the women's T20, I think, is starting at the right time. World Cup.
There's a game in Sydney tonight. Yeah, I'm pretty certain it's Sydney tonight.
What's that?
Cricket.
Yeah, in Sydney. Giants Stadium. 7 p.m. Check your local guides. While we're on basketball, the Tall Blacks defeated the Boomers last night.
Australia A.
Australia A, yes.
I'm not even sure if it was Australia A.
Well, it's Australia. It was Australia
B, yeah.
The Boomers. They were defeated by the Tall Blacks, which was a bit of a setback, but they're playing Hong Kong, I think, is their next game on Sunday, I think. Might be what's happening.
Would you call them minnows?
Saturday it is. So the Boomers take on Hong Kong. I would call them...
Possibly a developing nation.
108-98 was the scoreline for the Tall Blacks defeating the Boomers last night. We went through the squad the other day. It's a very inexperienced Boomers squad and certainly a long way from a full-strength Boomer Australian basketball squad. But anyway, they're out there having a crack and they went down by 10 points. Do want to acknowledge too, didn't do this yesterday and I should have, the performance by Yokohama F. Marinos. Did you see their performance in the Asian Champions League against Sydney FC the other night? 4-0 to Yokohama F. Marinos. Mm. Now, the reason I bring that up is they are coached by Ange Postecoglou, who continues to dominate proceedings over there in the J-League. And Yokohama doing a hell of a job. He put on a clinic, they did, against sort of the master and the apprentice, Steve Corica for Sydney FC.
Yeah.
And Ange Postecoglou at Yokohama. He's doing great things. I think every time he gets back to Australia for these opportunities and puts on a bit of a clinic, there'd be a real strut on the way to the airport, I reckon. The shoulders would be back, the chest would be out, saying, I told you I could do this.
Yeah.
I told you I could do this.
Yep.
Very good he was, and very, very nice work from Yokohama, even though it was against one of our teams in the A-League. Melbourne City defeated the Wanderers last night, too, in the W-League. We spoke to Emily Van Egmond about this the other day. They clinched the premiership last night, did Melbourne City. So well done to the girls. 4-0, if you don't mind. Just putting on another bit of a clinic in the world of soccer/football. Let's talk some boxing because there is an enormous bout this weekend. It is the resumption of the feud between Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury. Ben Damon is on hand, Fox Sports chief boxing reporter, who's been good enough to join us. So good morning, Ben.
Yeah, good morning. How are things back home? It's certainly picking up over here. We're starting to get into the heavyweight world title spirit, and Vegas is pumping.
What's it like, Vegas, in a build-up like this? Because not only is this a heavyweight title fight, it's two massive personalities who seemingly don't have much love for each other, which creates a whole different level of tension.
Yeah, it's a massive fight, and these are two huge personalities, and that really adds to this promotion. So you've got two very contrasting boxing styles, but two men who are very confident, love to talk it up, and are pretty forthright in regards to what they plan to do to the other. So, yeah, this is the biggest heavyweight title fight we've seen for an awfully long time, and it's got all of the bells and whistles. It's got a great deal of promotion over here. It's become a really mainstream fight. It's going to do huge numbers internationally and in Australia, and it's a very exciting one as well, because you've got Deontay Wilder, who is arguably the biggest puncher in the history of the heavyweight division, and Tyson Fury, who is an enigma because he's not a big puncher. He just moves and shakes around and tricks people out of throwing their own punches and outboxes them and makes them look silly at times. So it's a fantastic fight, and the stage is well and truly set for Sunday Australian time with Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury to do it all again.
And I imagine, too, the excitement builds because it goes against the trend of modern boxing, which has annoyed a lot of people, Ben, that the best fighters avoid the other best fighters. These guys are happy to get in the ring and have another crack at it. They want to see how good they are in this situation.
Yeah, so we've seen the crossing of the paths, the crossing of the lines in international boxing, because they're with different promotional outfits who don't often work together. And for this fight, and for the first time they did it as well, they managed to breach that impasse. So, yeah, it's really good for the sport that this can be done, that these two sides can come together to make a massive fight like this. And, yeah, we see an Englishman and an American, Top Rank and PBC, coming together, and the networks as well in Fox in the US and ESPN. So it took a lot of negotiations to get this done, but they've done it, and we're the beneficiaries because we get to see a heavyweight world title fight with arguably the two best heavyweight boxers in the world, but certainly with the winner to be very worthy of that crown. So it's hugely exciting for the sports, and really good for the heavyweight division. And if the heavyweight division is strong, then boxing is strong.
Ben, was it gamesmanship yesterday at the press conference, or do these two seriously not like each other?
Well, I don't think it's gamesmanship. Like, there's been so much build-up to this fight. There's been so much discussion. There was obviously a first fight, 12 rounds the first time around as well. So there's animosity. There's a lot of feeling. And it's such an important fight for the legacy of both of these fighters and for their ongoing boxing careers. So I think what we saw yesterday is the fact that they do like to talk it up. They're both forthright, they're both confident, and it exploded into a lot of words, a great deal of words, and then a little push and shove as well. They were pretty smart about the way they did that. Obviously, they didn't want to cut each other or headbutt or do anything that's going to compromise the fight, but they went just shy of that, and certainly the war of words was hotter yesterday than it has been at any point during the promotion for bout one or this second time around. So I don't know whether there was any plans by promoters for anything in particular to be said or done at that at the press conference, but certainly these fighters did what they pleased. They decided to try and get in under each other's skin, and I think they succeeded.
Time to get into the Friday form. A huge day of racing tomorrow at Caulfield. Blue Diamond Day, 3 Group 1s on the card, and there's only two people you want to talk to about that in this world, as far as I'm concerned. One of them is the world's greatest form analyst, Dean Lester, who you know very much from his years here on RSN 927. He's on location today, and it's great to have him with us. Dino, good morning.
Daniel, great to be with you. I've missed out on a lot of the great OBs, the Australian Open Golf, and many of the great racing OBs that you've got, but I am working on assignment for RSN today.
We're very excited about that, and it's great to have you able to join us, even though you are, well, you're doing great things, and people will find out eventually what that's going to be. It's a great production that's going in at the moment, but we're very, very pleased you're able to join us, Dino, from location, which we can't tell you where it is at the moment, because it's very, very secretive. Nonetheless, we're going to have the mail come. Nick Quinn's with us from the tab. Good morning, Quinny.
I'm very intrigued to find out where he is. I know when we did ring, you heard that international call, and yes, it took a few seconds for the number to go through as well. So yes, Hopefully, Dino, it's nice and sunny. Is it AM or PM in the part of the world that you're at the moment, Dino?
No, it is AM, Nick, and we're going along beautifully here.
Are you near where the jungle, they do the jungle show?
Well, yeah, I was thinking about that too, Adam, but no, I'm not near the jungle show.
We can't say too much.
The guess is going.
Yeah, we can't say too much. Send your guesses in, 0416905052. Where's Dino? It's like a Where's Wally situation, but where's Dino? If you find him, let us know where he is. There's a prize on offer. That'd be impressive. Quinny, it's a great day tomorrow, Blue Diamond Day, but I want to talk about one of your tweets last night, firstly. You were enamoured with the amount of love for the Australian Football League and upon its resumption from the men's perspective last night in the March Cup.
Never seen anything like it. Not just for the March Cup. I think AFLW's done a terrific job to start the new season, and that's growing in popularity. But the attendances at these warm-up games, people talking about footy 24-7, I cannot recall a season with people so desperate for the great game to resume. Maybe the fact the cricket season was a bit of a setback.
Yes.
But everyone just cannot wait for the footy to come back. Do you agree?
Well, seemingly you might be right. From just anecdotal evidence, I think you might be right. Because there hasn't been many scandals in world of footy. There hasn't been a lot of fluff pieces. It's just footy's not really been in the news through the last couple of months.
Well, the AFL's done their customary try and get in the news 24-7 by putting out some junk stories over summer and during the spring carnival, changing halftime and some of the other ridiculous ideas that they did float to just keep their name in the media. So once again, they've done a great job with that.
But I think post-Christmas, they went quiet.
Yeah.
I think, you know, there was a fair bit of what you say before Christmas, Quinny, but I reckon post-Christmas it was a bit quiet. And I think, I personally think because the international cricket summer was so dull, that I think there is a real craving for it. There's no doubt about that.
Wish they'd go quiet in the first week of November and late October and let their four-legged friends have the airtime. Mm.
Well, they've got some airtime tomorrow. Don't you worry about that, because we're at Caulfield for Blue Diamond Day. It's going to be fantastic. Three Group 1s on the card, as I said. The first SMS suggestion for you, Dino, is the Playboy Mansion is currently where you are. I'll let you handle that one if you need to. But to what we do on the Friday form for first-time players is go through the quaddy legs of the next day's major metropolitan meeting, normally one of the big tracks in the city. It is Caulfield tomorrow for Blue Diamond Day, and the first leg of the quaddy team is race number 6, the PFD Food Services Futurity Stakes, a Group 1 weight for age event over 1,400 metres. It is a super field that is going to put on a super contest, I reckon, Dino. At the moment, Melody Bell, the New Zealander, with Opie Bosson in the saddle, is favourite, a very tight favourite at $2.80 at tab.com.au.
Yeah, it's a tremendous race, Daniel. I mean, it's a great weight for age race, got a great history at that, Caulfield, and it's a small field, but really shapes up well, and a lot of these horses going on to the All-Star Mile, as we saw yesterday. I think Super Seth, a three-year-old, the one to beat. He was tremendous winning first up. He's a Caulfield Guineas winner. I just think the way the race sets up, he'll be following Melody Bell, and I think probably Colding will be following Super Seth. So it sets up to be a really intriguing battle between the three main chances, I think. The market's really suggesting that, and it's a big gap to the rest, but I'm with Super Seth from Melody Bell. Colding will improve with this run and be really peaking for the All-Star Mile, and I'm just going to put Streets of Avalon in for fourth because he's hard fit in the lead. He's a great backup horse. He's a good Caulfield horse. He lacks the class of these horses, but yeah, give a good sight for a long way. But I think the top three are class runners in this race.
Class normally finds its way to the top at a weight for age event. Quinny, is that what we're seeing with the punters as well?
Yeah, Super Seth's now into 280. Melody Bell, who's had 6 starts over the 1400 for 5 victories, a 290 second leg. Colding at 330. Streets of Avalon, 15. Dino, was the mini conundrum here the 1400 and the fact that most of these runners are set for races over longer distances this campaign?
Yeah, it probably is. And that's where I think Super Seth being a colt, I think this would be a terrific addition to his CV. He's already a Caulfield Guineas winner, but he's a weight for age Group 1 winner. I think he'll be trying to keep the winning streak going. Melody Bell and Colding are aiming at the All-Star Mile in a couple of weeks or 3 weeks' time. So that's probably, as you said, the conundrum. I think just Super Seth, he just sets up so well to win this race.
Well, he's a serious horse. And M and Mark Hunter, who we've had in here a few times, got a little piece of that action too. So we wish them all the best. The Western Bulldogs boys, Rama, are involved in this too.
Yeah, plenty of them. Numbers.
Well, you've got one job.
Yep.
To give us the numbers after every race here on the...
I'm pretty good at it also.
Well, you have moments. Last week we had the one out. Was it last week we had the one out?
One out.
And you caught a few people off guard with just mentioning the one number.
What?
Two.
Two.
What have we got in the first leg?
8, 7, 1, and 3.
8, 7, 1, and 3. The next suggestion to find Dino is, well, someone's suggesting you're trying to find Daniel Maxwell in Dubai, Dino, which is very humorous. Very humorous in the...
It is humorous. I've also been told that I'm part-timing as the cash cow, so...
Well done, whoever sent you that message. Part-time in the cash cow. Brilliant. 8-7-1-3 in the first leg of the quaddy for the Futurity Stakes. The second leg is the feature event on the card, the $1.5 million Blue Diamond Stakes. 2-year-old Group one over the 1,200 metres, a full field of... Oh, sorry, no, we're only got 15 because Faiera has been scratched for Anthony Cummings. 15 in the field, and Hanseatic, despite a very sticky barrier draw, Dino, with the inside gate, is still a firm favourite at tab.com.au, around about $2.40.
Yeah, and he should be too, Daniel. He's the best horse in the race. He's going to need a scenario where he gets through the field. He reminds me very much, say, of a horse like a Lingi who had the similar style. She drew inside in the Blue Diamond, cut through the field and got the money, and he's got the talent to overcome that if he gets held up a bit. And he just lets down so quickly, and that's he's going to help Luke Curry probably get through the field at some stage. I certainly think the filly here, Muntasira, was a very good run behind Let's Be Glam, and I think can probably turn the tables on that filly. Rulership ran very well behind Hanseatic, and he looks, you know, good talent. I think the little roughie here at a price is Riverina Storm. I think she's had only a light preparation into it, but she has... I liked her run last start, and she's got Dwayne Dunn, who's just... he's won four Blue Diamonds, I think. And I think Tagaloa is the other one worth considering. This is a bit like last week. You could probably just go with number two, or you could go a lot wider. I think if he gets the breaks, he'll win Hanseatic.
Couple of questions on Hanseatic. Do we take two quaddies, one with him, one out, and then one with the other runners that you suggested?
Definitely.
Okay, that's a good start. Now, are we taking $2.40 on him getting clear air? The one mini concern might be gate one. Do we anticipate they'll go at a good speed, the race will break up and it won't be an issue? Or do you anticipate there might be a time or two where you have got your heart in your mouth?
I think he probably will, just because of the way he races. Not necessarily last start, he was probably going to track up a bit closer and had to get check off heels. But the way the sort of speed map sets up here, he's going to be midfield or a bit worse. And at some stage, he's going to have to probably rely on that little bit of luck. But what he has got is that ability to run like a 10-6, 10-7 sectional that just puts him through the field and into the race.
Let's Be Glam's been well back since the draw, $9 into $6.50 now on the third line of betting at that quote. Are you surprised that she's that short considering Muntasira, who was the luckless runner-up when favourite in that race, is double-figure odds? Do you think she's now been maybe overbet?
Yeah, I think so. And the market didn't really want her 2 weeks ago when she was $31. It was a very good win, mind you. I just wonder if that was an absolute peak run and you know, if she can build off that, she's a legitimate chance. If that was her peak run, well, you know, this is the key with 2 year-olds, just hitting the day in the right sort of form.
One runner that has had a couple of grand finals this campaign but just keeps winning is number 8 Away Game, the Magic Millions winner 2 starts ago. Do you see her running a good race at double figure odds, or do you think maybe she's been up for a while and this is a big assignment?
I think she'll run a good race. I think The 3-wide line that she got in at the Gold Coast was the perfect spot to be, and she showed good fight to win last start. But as you said, she's been busy, and she was, I thought, you know, fairly well beaten by Hanseatic on debut, even though she did have a little bit of a hard luck story there. So look, she'll be competitive, but I just haven't got her in the numbers.
One of the conversation points always for Blue Diamond, Dino, is the weight allowance given to the fillies. They ran a faster time. Was the last one the preview or the prelude?
Prelude.
They ran faster times in the Colts and Geldings in the Prelude. Do you take anything out of that, or are they just differently run races?
They were differently run races, Daniel. And the thing about the Colts were how quick they were home. So going from 1,000 to 11, now up to 12, you just want to see that good bit of strength at the end of a race. And certainly, I think Hanseatic, even though he ran about a length slower than Let's Be Glam, his strength late was very impressive.
He's the only horse, I think, in the field to run under 22 seconds for the last 400. He's done it twice.
One of our friends, Juppy, has just tweeted in saying maybe Dino's in witness protection.
What's he named in witness protection for?
Not sure.
What's he done?
He witnessed?
What have you witnessed, Dino? Is there something you haven't told us?
Yeah, no, I'm unaware. Juppy may be onto something.
Well, he's got lots of thoughts, Juppy. He's all over it every day on the Breakfast Club, and we love his work. Rammer, one job.
Two, 12, six, 14 and 5.
And Quinny's advice, take one with the two straight out. And then one with a few more numbers in that, 12, 6, 14 and 5 in the second leg of the quaddy. The third leg is the Oakley Plate. Let's get through all the group ones while we're here. The race 8 over the 1,100 metres. Another group one affair, $500,000. And there are 17, not 18 will go around, won't they, Quinny? Because Vainstream will come in for I Am Immortal, who's been scratched for Anthony Cummings. And it's a pretty good field. Bivouac, there seemingly is a bit of a knock. I was talking to a couple of people yesterday, Dino, about Bivouac, and they want to lay Bivouac tomorrow, but it's favourite at tab.com.au, $2.90.
I don't know why that would be. He's a very good horse. He's one win here at Caulfield was over the track and distance in the Vain Stakes, and he was outstanding, and then he went right through, won the Golden Rose, and luckless in the Manicato, and then he was very good in the Coolmore, and I think it's a great reference. He's got 55.5 kilos. That's the one thing that's a sticking point. For a three-year-old, it's enough weight, but he's a very, very good horse, and I think he's the one to beat. Anahid, one of the other three-year-olds, she's in great form. Her win last start was excellent, just a perfect pipe opener to go to this race and run well. So I'm tipping the three-year-olds there. But I'm giving chances to 7 Trope, who he needs to sort of actually go and win a race. He shows a lot of promise. He's only won the one race. But the fact that Dwayne Dunn wants to ride at 52.5 kilos interests me.
Yeah. 12
Hal Vorsen, who's been really good through the summer. And he's got that G-Tra form from last winter. And, of course, he won the Lightning last week. And good little roughie here, I think, All Too Royal with a big weight drop. He's got a chance at odds, but Bivouac's the one to beat. If it's not him, then it's a typical Oakley Plate. It gets very open.
I think the little concern with Bivouac is it's always a bit of a challenge when you see a three-year-old giving older horses weight, but to flip that around, this is one of the best crops of three-year-olds in decades, and we probably only get one chance to back them on the way through.
Yeah, that's very true. They're an exceptional bunch, and he's right towards the top of the tree with them, having won the Golden Rose and second in the Coolmore. They're the races you want to see them run well in.
Dino, I like a roughie for the trifecta in the first four here. Bonds Away was fifth in the race last year, resumed with a good run behind Jungle Edge. Maybe not a winning chance, but a good one for the multiples. Do I get the tick from you?
Yeah, I've tipped him in this race the last 2 years to run in the money, and he's run well, and again, he'll run well. I wouldn't be putting him in a quaddy, but definitely trifecta in first four.
What's Ball of Muscle? What's having a Ball of Muscle? That was a spruik horse for a while. All of a sudden, we can't get near it. Well, it's Group 1, in fairness.
Yeah, he's 9-year-old. He's done a fair job, Daniel.
Yeah, but we had 9-year-olds of recent years. Last season, it was my horse, Hartnell. He's 15 years old, still running Group 1 placings.
Yeah, well, this horse, he was Group 2 placed 2 starts back, and he's up in the weights. The one thing he does love is Caulfield. Sydney horse, he's 5 goes to Caulfield, 2 wins, 3 placings, so obviously, Joe Pride, dead set target for him, but whether he could win the 58 would be my query.
Number 15, Pippi Dino's been well backed, has drawn the wide gate, but does have early speed. Do you think she'll be able to find the front? Does your form map have her in front after the first 300?
Oh, she'll be there, but I mean, she's with the speed horses, which is probably a good thing. She's with Ball of Muscle to her inside, Anahid to her outside, and Freya Dead outside them, and then you've got sort of Bivouac and Fardenau back to the inside. So there's good speed sort of out wide, so we'll take her across. Just got the query whether that mare's form from last spring will be good enough to win an Oakley Plate.
Another one that's always around the money, very consistent, number 13, Hummer Hummer, yes. Sir William Pike to take the ride. Do you think she's a chance?
Well, they've got similar form lines. If you like one, you probably like both of them. Where she's going to get to and from barrier three in the run, she's going to need a lot of luck getting through the traffic at the right time.
Rammer, Oakley Plate numbers, please.
3, 16, 7, 12, and 8.
3, 16, 7, 12, and 8. Willie Pike's only got the two rides tomorrow?
Two rides tomorrow, then he flies back to Perth at midnight Saturday night to ride at Pinjarra Sunday.
So he's doing that for a reason.
He is. The reason is, and I did tweet out the horse's name because that might be the GOS Get Out Stakes on Sunday, or potentially we have a great day and we're winning more, but he wants to ride a horse called Tell 'Em We're Coming in Race 8, the Pinjarra Classic. So that's why he's going to Pinjarra on the Sunday.
I would suggest that's a good push, as we say in the business.
Back again next Saturday for the Australian Guineas as well, so it'll be great to see him here.
There is a concern about your status, Quinny. In the paper today, you don't exist. Major. In the tip section, normally there's Michael Manley, Chris Venuccio, and you. Ray Thomas has taken your position.
Who is Ray?
Breakdown in communication. There's someone new in the department at the Herald Sun, and they said, can you go chase up that tipster with the great hair for his selections at Caulfield tomorrow? And they went to Ray Thomas. If you haven't seen Ray Thomas, Google him. It is just a work of art.
It's a beautiful piece, is what it is. It's a beautiful piece of hair. You and I would give anything for the hair that Ray has.
10% of the hair that Ray's got.
Well, but my concern is more your status within the building.
No, I had a very busy day yesterday, and I said I'll put them in for Saturday's paper because it's such a brilliant day that I couldn't let the Legion of Fans down by doing any less than 2 days' form for it.
You got your best.
Got the multi in. That's a good multi, too.
Your value bet in there.
I don't mind that, actually. We'll talk about that shortly. We're 3 legs into the quad eat tomorrow at Caulfield. We'll go through the numbers shortly if you've just joined us. But the last leg is race number 9, Dino. It's the Peter Young Stakes over 1,800 metres of Group 2. Wait for Age of Fair. It's a terrific day racing tomorrow at Caulfield. There's 9 going around, and Kingswell Dream is second up and favourite at tab.com.au.
Yeah, he should be too, Daniel. He's, I think, one of the good bets of the day. He was terrific first up in the Eeyore Stakes. He gets to the longer trip, which suits him. Mark Zara rides from Barrier 1. A little bit of speed comes across from out wide, and he gets, a pretty good run, and I think he can win. The danger might be Regal Power, first up with Willie Pike aboard over from WA. He's a good galloper, has won the Railway Stakes and then won at Wait for Age of 2100 last start. Resumes here, I think can run very well. Constantinople, who was a bit of the spook horse in the spring Caulfield and Melbourne Cup time, resumes here at 1800. I'm interested in him first go, and 9 Miss Siska because she's got the race fitness on her side. But really, I think that the race revolves around numbers 4 and 5, and you might want to take a little quaddie with just those two numbers.
Is that what the punters are saying as well, Quinn? Is it pretty clear cut?
Well, I'm trying to work out why he's 250 and not shorter, not evens, not even a slice of odds on. He just looks better than them, Dino. Was so good first up. Are you surprised he's not a better... Are you surprised he's still as good as he is from a betting perspective?
Yeah, I am really, because he comes through significant weight for age, Group 1 form. I think the others are on the edge of that, but not as proven as Kingswell Dream.
It might be one of those days, too, if some of the well-backed favourites, the likes of, Bivouac's going to be well-supported earlier on the day. We're going to have a couple of other favourites as well. A few of those all-up bets through Hansietti could just all be into Kingswell Dream. So it might be one of those ones where 2 minutes before they jump, he's an even money favourite and half the track's on him.
Yeah, could well be. I'm hoping that way because we've tipped those horses you mentioned.
Oh, this is going to be a fill-up tomorrow. I love it.
Righto. So that's pretty straightforward, it seems, in the last leg. So we'll get the last leg, Ram. I just need the numbers from you.
4, 5, 8, and 9.
4, 5, 8, and 9 in the last leg. So for those playing at home, Ram, that just jumped in the car or turned the radio on and want to know Dino's numbers for the quaddie tomorrow so they can do some more analysis themselves if they need to, what are those numbers, please?
Race 6, 8, 7, 1, and 3.
8, 7, 1, 3.
Race 7, 2, 12, 6, 14, and 5.
2, 12, 6, 14, 5.
Race 8, 3, 16, 7, 12, and 8.
3, 16, 7, 12, and 8.
Race 9, 4, 5, 8, and 9.
4, 5, 8, and 9, your numbers for the quaddie tomorrow. That's what's happening on the Friday form, which means there's a couple of things left to do. Quinny, don't laugh at me. We need the Friday form formula bet. That's what we need, the Friday form formula bet, where Dino gets a chance for one of our listeners. If you haven't registered, by the way, make sure you do that at the website, rsn.net.au. You get a chance for Dino to invest on your behalf. And tomorrow, Dino, what are those numbers, please?
Yeah, it's for Ian Forsyth of Spring Gully. For Ian, a $40 win bet, race 2, number 3, Adelaide Ace. $40 to win, race 9, number 4, Kingswell Dream. And $40 on the all-up of the pair, race 2, number 3, into race 9, number 4. And that's for Ian Forsyth of Spring Gully.
Good luck to you, Ian. That would come to, Nicholas?
$7.50, $3 by $2.50.
I am happy with $7.50 for that. Has there been love for Adelaide Ace?
Adelaide Ace has been the best back runner in the race, yes.
Righto. Okay. 2-3 into 9-4 for the formula bet tomorrow for Ian. $7.50 is the double at tab.com.au. Dino, one more thing for you. It's the time-honoured Ramarafi. It's not the Macca's miraculous money-maker garbage. It's it's the Ramarafi, and forever it will be that. Have you got something special for us tomorrow?
Well, I didn't have him as top selection, but I think he's big odds in the Oakley Plate, and that's race 8, number 8, All Too Royal. I think he'll run a really good race. It might be a case of maybe one unit to win and three or four units to place, and I think he'll give you a great run for your money.
Last seconds of the first hit out for Hawthorn and St Kilda. Ben's footy's back at Moorabbin, and the Saints cap it off with a victory. And that famous song rings out around Moorabbin again. It might bring a tear to the eye of a few old Saints.
Well, I wonder if there was a tear for a few old Saints out there in the animal enclosure at Moorabbin last night. Footy was back there for from a men's perspective anyway, with the Marsh Community Series kicking off against the Hawks. Dean Kemp was a part of that lineup in the red, white and black, and he joined us on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Dean.
Good morning, fellas. How are you?
We are terrific, thank you. Now, we know it's not for premiership points, and we know all that sort of stuff, but the fact that there was another men's football at the Moorabbin Football Ground, the RSCA Park these days for the Saints, was it spoken about from the club's perspective in the build-up? Because it's a very important place for people of St Kilda.
Yeah, definitely. We all spoke on the captain's one morning, and Rats got up, and Matty Finnis, the CEO, and just kind of spoke a little bit about, you know, what the ground and that meant to the Saints and meant to the loyal fans and stuff. So, yeah, we did touch on that briefly, and it was awesome just to see it packed out and so many people there. It was great.
It's nice that they did that, I reckon. I think it's important in the history of your footy club, and certainly places of such emotional and historical significance. Getting some love in the build-up to a clash like that is a good thing. And you played all right too. Geez, you moved the ball well. Is this what we're expecting under Brett Ratton?
Yeah, we Ratts has pretty much just kind of left it up to us boys, and he kind of, he's given us some guidelines, but he said, you know, you kind of swim between your flags and, you know, whatever you want to do with the ball, just make it quick or depending on the state of the game. But, yeah, we'll definitely try and attack the goal face a bit more and, hopefully try and kick some easy goals this year.
So take us into that a little bit more deeper, Dean, about that. So is it a situation at the start of the pre-season he sat you down and said, how would you like to play and I'll shape a style around that, or was it more a collaborative approach, or did he kind of set the guidelines and you worked around those guidelines?
Yeah, it was kind of, you know, there was still, obviously, Rat played a big part in it and pretty much kind of showed us the direction he wanted us to play the footy, but, yeah, it was kind of, depending on who you are and the personnel and you know, the kicking style and everything like that, so he pretty much just said, if you think you can hit that inside kick or you think you can run and carry and break the line and get it out the back, you kind of, you know, play to your strengths. And that was a big focus over the pre-season, was just playing to the individual strengths and with games to go and all that training, the kind of chemistry and, knowing your players and stuff just ended up started becoming real, and obviously it was on show last night, and hopefully we can keep building that.
As soon as you said hit the inside kick, I thought of one person, and that was Brad Hill, with what he was able to do immediately last night. What sort of impact has he had on the football club? Because I must confess, while it was only a pre-season game, it's like he'd been a St Kilda jumper for many, many years, the way he just sort of fitted in.
Yeah, Brad's been awesome. Pretty much as soon as he stepped into the club, and he's just a great guy to be around. He's bubbly, he's energetic. And then obviously last night, just, you know, you kind of, when you're up against him, you're like, gee, what's he going to do and how are we going to stop him? But now he's in the red, white and black. It's pretty exciting. And like you said, he takes a game on and breaks lines. And he just plays to his strengths. So it's awesome to see. And I can't wait for it when the whips are cracking.
I was really interested in the role of Ben Long last night. You spoke about the ball movement and quick movement into your forward line. He looked like he played across halfback his whole career. Now, I know he's only still young, but will we see that moving into the season? Because I felt that really worked well last night.
Yeah, Long, he's been terrific down back. He's pretty much done the whole process down back. So From what I know and what most of the boys know, we're expecting him across half back and just to bring that dash, and he really backs himself in the air. And, you know, kind of, he's a real strong body as well for a little guy. He can lay some big hits and big tackles. So, yeah, Longy's been terrific down there, and hopefully he can stay down there and grow in confidence and, yeah, really use that ball off half back.
Without a doubt, the biggest story in Australian sport last week was the decision by Netball Australia not to renew the contract of Australian Diamonds coach Lisa Alexander. She will get out there one more time, March 1, when the Diamonds take on the Super Netball All-Stars in a bushfire fundraiser match, and she's been good enough to join us for the outgoing coach on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Lise.
Good morning.
Great to have you on the program. As I said at the top, it was the biggest news in Australian sport last week. The decision by Netball Australia. A week down the track, how does it sit with you?
Well, I've actually known for a little while, but yeah, look, it's disappointing. As I've already said, from my point of view, I would have loved to have kept going. But as I've also said, it's up to the board and their decision. It's always been that way. And, you know, to represent your country at the highest level as a coach is an enormous privilege. And I'm really grateful for the time I've had and enjoyed it immensely. And, yes, on to new challenges.
Is it nice to be able to have this bushfire match as a last hurrah, so to speak? Often when contracts for coaches in any sport are not renewed, you don't get that chance to have that moment to say goodbye. Is it nice that you've got that opportunity?
Oh, absolutely, especially our program, which is decentralised. I don't get to see the athletes, you know, week in, week out, like normal club coaching situation. So this is kind of quite unique, and it's a great opportunity for me to have a last run around with the players, and also to have such a great cause for it to be, you know, for the bushfire victims and to raise as much money as we can.
Lisa, when you reflect over 9 years and 100 appearances as a coach, take away the wins, what are you most proud of that you achieved with the Diamonds?
Oh, that's a great question. There's so much. And that's what I think I've, you know, been most pleased about, I suppose, this last period of time, just reflecting on that and the enormity of the job when I came into the job to sort of really build it up from the ground up. Particularly coming away from the Australian Institute of Sport background. So to build it up in the National Sporting Organisation, rebuild the staff and the system, took enormous energy and effort, but we worked really well together as a team. And I think, I guess the culture, particularly within the group, not taking for granted representing their country was a really big thing for me. I'd seen it in other sports, particularly in rugby and cricket, where the athletes kind of, I felt, you know, forgot why they were representing their country. And I was determined to make sure that didn't happen with the Diamonds.
Lisa, congratulations on your time as coach. And I think one thing, we spoke to Marnie Fechner about this last week, Sherelle's been very big on this as well, about how you're able to, I reckon, contemporise the sport with both the way it was played but also the way you prepared. It was something that you were very passionate about.
Oh, definitely. The high-performance outcomes, pure just sports science, preparation, you know, putting, I guess, those athletes right up into that top echelon of athletes within Australia was another area that I was really determined to work on with them and, you know, with our staff. So, you know, I think we did get through there, and obviously we've set the benchmark very high. And, you know, New Zealand, particularly this year, the Silver Ferns have really come into that area of high performance in their training. They've finally twigged that they need to work very hard as well. So they've come through, and the international countries have really, you know, I guess, improved in that area. So we've certainly set the benchmark. And we've had the other countries lifting their game in that area as well.
And the reason I asked the question the way I did is it's a fine line, because you've been able to set up so many terrific fundamentals, which are kind of intangibles in a way, but then you sort of get judged on performance. And so narrow were the losses in Commonwealth Games and World Cups. And that, in the end, when a goal either way, it could be a very different set of circumstances for you at the moment.
Yeah, Yeah, look, I think we can use that as a convenient, I guess, benchmark to judge on. And it's, I think, really, we've performed extremely well. We're still number one in the world. I guess what we haven't done is we haven't won and closed out those benchmark events. And that's the cutthroat nature of Australian netball, really. But also, you know, that their signals are changed. I think we've traditionally had, you know, a change in our coaching structure after two cycles. And, you know, this, I think the board made a decision around that as well.
It's already unfolding in Adelaide for the Superloop 500, the kickoff to the supercar season. It's great to have Lee Holdsworth with us from Tickford Racing on the Breakfast Club on a Friday morning. Good morning, Lee.
Morning, guys. How are we?
We are terrific, mate. It's great to have you with us on the eve of another season. Are you excited? What's the build-up been like from Tickford Racing's perspective?
Oh, it's been flat out. You know, over the break, the guys have been flat out pulling the cars apart, making sure they're all freshened up for the new season and new colours. And for the number five car that I drive, we've got Truck Assist on board this year, so a new sponsor on board. But, yeah, it's been all hands on deck to get the cars ready. We tested it Tail and Bend this week on Tuesday, and then one day off, and then we were at the track yesterday, out on track yesterday afternoon. So it's already started for us, and unfortunately it didn't end the end of, but it's not the way I wanted to start the season, that's for sure. We ended up in a bit of a crash at the end of practice one with Gary Jacobson, but the boys have fixed the car and we'll be back out today.
Not ideal first week in to have the incident in practice.
Not at all.
Not ideal. Can I ask you just on the car itself, the Mustang GT, which you're driving for Tickford Racing, it sort of took the whole field by storm last year, the Mustang, and Scotty McLaughlin obviously doing great things in his edition of that. Does it put pressure on you to try and find a way to match his speed because you've got the similar setup?
Yeah, look, every team's got their pros and cons, and obviously they've got a lot of pros, they seem to have a bit of an advantage over us last year and over the field. So, but in terms of the Mustang, yeah, the Ford Mustang has obviously been a great addition to the category. They came out firing last year. Towards the end of the year, they knocked us back a fair bit with aero and a couple of other things. So the Holden was pretty strong at the end of last year. So, but they did do a full re-evaluation on all the aero parity over the break, and we've come back with the category has got a lot less downforce this year. So it's going to be interesting, I think. We'll see with there's new shocks, new shock absorbers this year, so everyone's on like a set shock, whereas that was an open part of the series last year where you could spend a lot of money on development. So I think it'll be a great leveller. I think the start of this year you'll see different people at the front. You know, obviously you'll get your regulars still there, but you might see a few others spring a surprise.
So as a team leader, as you are of Tickford Racing, are you one that sort of gets all the mechanics together and says, right, we got to get better than what we're doing at the moment based on what Scott McLaughlin's doing? He's driving the same car as us. How can we get as fast as them? This can't be fair. Or is it something that the technicians are just as competitive as the drivers to make sure that you're finding the secret recipe that Scott seems to have?
Yeah, everyone's trying to catch Scotty at the moment. And it's a difficult task when you're up against such a great team. And but yeah, like if we didn't think that we could catch him, we wouldn't be here. So we put our heads together over the break, and hopefully we've done a bit of development, which has hopefully made our cars a little bit quicker and a little bit better balanced. And you know, we're all working together. There's four drivers in our team, four engineers, and about 70 staff. So. But fortunately, we've got a great group of people at Tickford Racing, and I think we're pushing in the right direction. So this is the big telltale, the start of the season. So we're out for a good one, obviously, to kick off championship points.
I just want to take you back to the little crash that you spoke about. That was a backmarker, obviously. How do you control your anger within the first practice to just not lose it, really, against the other driver?
I mean, you know, I lose it when it's intentional, which happened to me last year with another driver. So, and I was pretty angry at that. But yesterday, I think it was, you know, Gary Jacobson, he's, you know, he's a good guy, and he's fairly fresh to the category, but inexperienced. And he was, yeah, he came over straight away after he got my way and apologised, and, you know, he was pretty filthy with himself. So I didn't need to say too much to him. But, yeah.
Copped $1,000 fine too.
At that point. Yeah, exactly.
Did Gaz
yeah.
for his part in that. Yeah. He copped it on the chin. He's going, when you're in the wrong, you're in the wrong, and I'll cop his whack. So that's not a bad thing.
Respect to him for that, yeah.
Yeah. Just on the car and the team this year, top 10 last year, I think your 10th position in the championship. Do you set yourself goals in terms of where you want to fit at the end of the season? Footy teams say we want to make the 8 or we want to make the top 4. What does a racing team do?
Yeah, oh, look, you've got to be realistic, and I think the second half of last year was pretty strong for me. I probably for the second half of the season probably scored the sixth or seventh most points. So I would aim for that this year, to finish in the top six or seven. And yeah, I think if I can do that, that'd be a pretty solid foundation to build on for next year.
And the Adelaide circuit itself, to kick off, I mean, it's pretty demanding circuit. You're almost airborne after turn one when you take on the corner. I mean, what's it like to be so physically fit, or they're required to be so physically fit to kick off the season? Don't even get a chance to warm into it.
Yeah, it's hard because, you know, we're pretty much the hardest round of the year physically and mentally as well. So to have so much time out of the car makes it very difficult to bounce back and, you know, be in your best fitness form for the start of the season. And for me, I raced at the Bathurst 12-hour a few weeks ago, so that was a great conditioning run for me. It was very hot. It was 40 degrees each day. And I was expecting it to be, you know, around the same temperatures here, but I'm finding I'm needing a jumper each day, which is strange. it's probably the coolest temperatures we've had in Adelaide for the Superloop 500 for years and years and years. So I think that it's probably going to be a bit easier this year than what it has been in the past. But in saying that, with the changes they've made to the cars, I actually think that there'll be a fair bit of attrition and a fair few mistakes throughout the races. So it's still going to be tough. But yeah, very difficult to come into the season and be in the best physical form without having the in-car experience over the break.
We've been lucky enough to have the hierarchy as part of the conversation throughout the season. Larry Kesselman came into the studio, as did Jeremy Lolliger, the commissioner of the NBL. It's a great title, and we love it. And he's been good enough to join us again as we have a bit of an end of home and away season break before the finals next year. Commish, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem. You are welcome anytime on this program. Don't you worry about that. And particularly after your competition, the NBL grew by 21% in attendance across the season. You must be absolutely wrapped with that level of feedback.
Yeah, look, it's all heading in the right direction, which is pleasing. It's our fifth consecutive year of attendance growth. And I think the most pleasing aspect of this season in terms of attendances is that it was across the board. Every single club grew their average attendance. And I think it's the first year that that's happened in the history of and it's a long history of the NBL, so we're very, very pleased.
It's an amazing effort when you think about it, every club getting increases. From a local perspective, Melbourne United drew 117,000 fans through the gates, six sellout crowds, and then you got the Phoenix who came in and had some unbelievable numbers, 75,000 people coming in for a first-year team.
Yeah, which is the best result that an expansion team's had in the league, so we're very, very pleased with the guys from the Phoenix. I thought they did a wonderful job both on and off court during the season. They had a bumper start to the season, definitely, helped by some a string of home games, and they did it a little bit tougher on the road. But I thought the product that they put out there was absolutely fantastic, and they're building the culture there the right way. And the other aspect of the Melbourne crowds that I'm very pleased with was there was a lot of, I guess, questioning or nervousness about whether or not it was too soon to introduce the second team back into Melbourne and whether or not that would cannibalise Melbourne United crowds. And, of course, we were very bullish that it would have the opposite effect, that the local competition would continue to drive audiences and rivalry, and that's proven to be the case. And Melbourne United have grown their audience as well. And as you say, six or seven sellouts there for Melbourne United was a fantastic result.
So, Jeremy, these numbers are absolutely brilliant, and basketball is going from strength to strength, no doubt. But what's your instruction now to your team? Is it simply go and sell it? Here's the actual facts. Or is there a deeper strategy to this to make the game grow again?
Yeah, look, the reality is that we're at about 85% capacity across our venues now. And so the strategy of the business needs to pivot a little bit in the sense that you will hit capacity relatively soon, and we need to be having longer-term conversations with governments and city councils about expanding basketball infrastructure in Australia, both at the professional level and grassroots level, because we're maxing out both in terms of participation and attendance. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, from a league point of view, our attention is very much focused on viewership, because that's not going to cap out. That's something where we can grow exponentially for a very long time yet, because our audience is not just here in Australia, it's now global, and we're looking to overseas markets to continue to grow eyeballs on the sport.
So you talk about Southeast Melbourne Phoenix. Was it above or below your expectation of where they could potentially be? The crowd numbers are amazing, but from a performance level?
Look, from a performance level, I really like the team that they put together in terms of the discipline and the culture that was instilled in that club from day one. They put the right foundation pieces in place with guys like Mitch Creek and Ben Magin, Adam Gibson, hard-nosed players who are always going to form a strong foundation of a good hard-nosed club. As I said, home crowds, in front of home crowds, they did very, very well. They struggled on the road a bit, but I'm sure they'll bounce back. I think it was difficult for them in the end, having so many home games to begin with. They got into a bit of a comfort zone, perhaps. It's a challenge that we have here in Melbourne because of the Australian Open being held at Melbourne Arena. Both Melbourne teams do tend to have more home games at the front of the season. We would like to spread that out a little bit more. And as the redevelopment of the State Basketball Centre continues, hopefully they'll be able to play some more games out there and we can spread the load over the season for them a little bit more.
And Jeremy, we've got a text that's just come in, and a basketball fan talking about how good the crowds are, but translating that into TV numbers. Now, we've had this discussion a little bit before as well. It seems basketball fans consume their basketball on television very different ways, and a lot of it is through streaming and all that sort of thing. But how do you get the TV numbers up?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I tend to talk now about viewership rather than TV because of that fact, but the reality is here in Australia, we're still very TV-focused, and we did increase our audience again significantly this year. I know the comparison from ESPN this season to Fox Sports last season, we're up about 20%, I believe.
Okay.
So that's very pleasing, but still, we're coming off low numbers, and the big challenge for us is how we translate what we think is a fantastic entertainment product in venue. How do you translate that through a screen into a living room? And we're still learning, and we're getting better at that. We've had a new production partner this year in IMG. It was their first year on the journey with us, and we think it's got better during the course of the season, and we think it's going to get better again during the finals. We're looking to step things up again in partnership with IMG and start testing some new things that will roll out in earnest next season.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.